The opinions expressed on this webmasterradio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of webmasterradio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of webmasterradio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome to the show today, everyone. Our guest today is Manisha Thakur. Pronounce your name properly?
Manisha Thakur.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got a better pronunciation out to your fans than I did. I wanted to circle with you and just tell the audience a little bit about your background. I'm sure they've read your bio by now, but so I won't go into the full details. But you're a financial wizard, shall we say, or guru, we like to say, in the life test world. With about 15 years of experience, you've had actually a wonderful title is a financial literacy advocate. That would be a wonderful title that I'm reading on your bio here. And you've been featured in national publications such as the New York Times, the Boston Globe, Forbes, Glamour, Real Simple, Women's Day. You've had some TV appearances on ABC and CNN, CNBC, Fox Network. So, wow, we're honored to have you on the show. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you tend to specialize in a deep analysis of women. I was reading one of your captions that talks about 2/3 of women over the age of 65 are relying upon Social Security payments as their primary source of income. That's an alarming statistic, I might add. Tell us a little bit about your background and what your focus is these days and what you really enjoy studying as far as the financial community is concerned.
Sure. So I spent 15 years in corporate America as a portfolio manager on the institutional side. So my clients were large corporations and endowments and foundations, and I helped pick the stocks that would go into their pension plans. And over the years, what I discovered was that what I enjoyed most were the sidebar conversations I would have with clients afterwards, particularly female clients or clients talking about the female members of their family about their personal finances. And then I thought back to my own education. I've been blessed. I did my undergrad at Wellesley. I have my MBA from Harvard, and I was never taught personal finance. And thinking, if you don't even learn it at Harvard Business School, where do you learn it? And that was really the genesis of my interest in pursuing what I believe is my lifelong calling, which is to help teach women in particular, but all Americans, how to learn to live their lives from a position of financial strength.
How are you using the web as a vehicle to educate? I know you publish your content in a variety of places. Tell us a little bit about the challenge of educating women and using the web to do that.
You know, the web has just been such a blessing in so many ways. I'll talk about it from a kind of a business perspective as well as a personal perspective. From a business standpoint, you know, when I first realized I had this bug to get out there and help women understand the basics of personal finance in a very plain English manner, no one knew who I was. I was just another person working in the financial services industry that happened to like issues of women's economic empowerment. But thanks to using search engine optimization and trying to learn as much as I could about Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and LinkedIn and MySpace, suddenly I was able to reach a much wider audience of people than I ever would have 20 years ago if I had the exact same urge. So professionally, it has been incredible. And then personally, what I have found stunning is how it accelerates just sort of the natural phenomenon of 6 degrees of separation and how rapidly my network of really amazing women has grown thanks to connections that have come about right now, primarily through Twitter, Facebook, and my blog.
Tell us a little bit about that world, your Twitter accounts, you know, how many followers do you have? How are you using that as a vehicle to educate and entertain, if entertainment is possible in the financial world?
No, actually, entertaining is one of my goals. So I am actually fairly new to the Twitter world. I just started tweeting in June or July of this year. Right now I have about 2,100 followers. And what I'm really trying to do is focus on, you know, I've heard various studies that talk about how what you really want is a tribe of 1,000 to 1,500 incredibly passionate people. If you can find the right 1,000 to 1,500 people, your message can go viral. So I'm not so focused on number of followers as I am the quality of interactions. And what I've tried to do with my Twitter feed is serve as a curator for information about personal finance and women's economic empowerment. So as I go through my day doing my reading, I try every day and find the 3 to 5 most interesting articles that I've come across, and that's what I put up on my Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm. And are you tending to link back to these articles in a variety of sources and using that as a vehicle and a platform to promote different sites?
Absolutely. In fact, I would say 99.5% of my tweets contain a link to another website. I mean, one of the great things I think about social media is it gives you a chance to publicize and draw attention to so many wonderful works and sites and organizations. And so I love nothing more than finding a really neat article that somebody else has written or a small organization that has a passion for helping women with money, and then watching a link to them be retweeted across the biosphere, if you will.
You could you tell everyone your Twitter handle so they could tune in?
Sure. I would love you to come and come join me on Twitter. And my handle is my name. It's at Manisha Thakur. And I will spell it M-A-N-I-S-H-A-T-H-A-K-O-R.
How do you monetize your effort and your energy and your educational platform?
That's the million-dollar question right now. So I started doing this for fun. I started doing this while I was working in the corporate world, and at that time I deliberately did not want to take any compensation for my activities because I wanted there to be no conflict of interest. I went out on my own in April of 2009, and so now I am in monetization mode. And what I found is that there are so many different models, you really have to figure out what feels most authentic to you. And in my case, I love to talk, and so I have ended up doing a fair amount of corporate spokesperson type work, where large corporations that are looking to give some kind of messaging around financial literacy will hire me to speak. I'm also doing keynote speeches, and then, of course, I've written, co-authored 2 personal finance books, so there's some monetization there. And then I do some writing, freelance writing on the subject as well. I have not opted to go into kind of the webinar or teleseminar route. I haven't figured out a way to do it that feels authentic yet, but there are some people that are doing a great job at it, and I'd like to keep learning from them.
Hmm. What do you think the messages need to look like these days to have impact on how people are managing their finances and how they can better that management?
I think the key word is simplicity. The right personal finance advice is out there. I mean, it strikes me often that the things I say, live within your means, don't have credit card debt, have an appropriate mix between stocks and bonds, sometimes they seem so dull and so almost overstated. I think the problem is we are inundated with, and this comes back to social media as well, and the internet, we're just so inundated with information that what people need to know is when presented with a financial choice, typically the best answer is the simplest answer. If you yourself can't understand the advice that is being given, the odds are very high the person giving you the advice doesn't understand what they're saying. And that good personal finance hygiene does not have to be complex.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're ever going to enter an age where we can quickly evaluate our financial condition easily and see recommendations pop up based upon the activity that we pop into some sort of widget?
You know, I mean, I think it's definitely possible, because if you want to assess what your current financial condition, this is what I would say. I'd say, first of all, pull together a list of what you own and what you owe. The difference is your net worth. You want to check that number once a year. You want the trend in that number to be upwards. If it's not upwards, something's going on with your assets or liabilities. You want to check into that. So that data could definitely be automated. And I could easily see that being put into some kind of chart form, and then people could track it. Another one that, you know, there are variations on this that I am seeing already at places like Mint.com and just Thrive.com are tracking your income and your expenditures. It obviously wants the difference between that, hopefully, to be positive, too, and the delta would be your savings. And so there are some online applications, but they're not simple yet. You know, I'd love to see, you know, a little application where you could snap a picture of a receipt on your iPhone or PDA, and it would automatically populate your expense account.
I mean, how hard – take a software program like QuickBooks, for example, or Quicken, even the many personal people use. Extremely popular. Millions of people out there using it. You know, why can't a fabulous – Harvard MBA person like yourself develop a way to take the data, which is really all right there in front of you, including you know your income, your expenses, your stock prices. I mean, it's all right there for that pool of people. And why can't we begin to see some interesting charts and graphs and you know visual representations of money management come into play? It would seem that the information and the recommendations and the advice should come from the data, not necessarily, from the general principles of accounting. Do you think there's something there?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that what happens is because you have once you have the ability to take that data. I mean, I see this all the time with analyses done in Excel. You can take your, you know, decimals out to 8 decimal points and have this feeling that it's a really deep analysis that you're doing. But, you know, they always say the rough rule of thumb with anything, and analytical is garbage in, garbage out. And so what I worry about if we get too automated with tracking and monitoring financials on an individual level is that, once again, we end up making something that could be really simple really complex. And so, I mean, to me, honestly, and you could automate this, and you know, I mean, I think Quicken and QuickBooks are two wonderful ways to kind of bridge pen and paper versus something really slick. But honestly, all you need to know to track your finances is your net worth, your budget, your inflows and outflows, and understand how you're investing your savings and the performance of those investments. If you can keep track of those three data points annually, that's it. That is the bedrock of good financial management. And the financial services industry oftentimes tries to make it much more complex than that, but that's what it boils down to.
Well, let's take a little station break here, and we'll get back to changing your personal financial world and as easily as you can make it, because I think we all need help with that. Back in a second, everybody, with more great information.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break. How do you choose the right affiliate network to partner with? The answer is simple. MarketHealth.com, where health and wealth connect. Established in 1998, the MarketHealth.com affiliate network allows you to market and promote the world's leading health and beauty offers on the net. Start making recurring income and the highest payouts in our industry. Choose from over 50 of the hottest selling offers, ranging from herbal supplements, skincare, vitamins, beauty products, weight loss, and much more. Sign up for free at MarketHealth.com and start making money today. Want to learn the biggest asset to driving online success? Let me introduce you to my expert advisor, PixelSilk. PixelSilk is a robust content management system built on a foundation to create online marketing success. It's the only content management system that offers keyword-specific SEO advice, can integrate with your shopping cart system, and offer multi-site management. PixelSilk frees my time while making my company's website easy to manage and promote. Even better, PixelSilk has been embraced by the SEO community.
I'm Bruce Clay, and PixelSilk is the first CMS I have ever felt good about recommending.
With this winning combination, we have all the tools we need. PixelSilk.com, the ultimate in SEO-driven CMS.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Affiliate marketing is changing rapidly. Stay ahead of the trends with Affiliate Marketing Insider. Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Affiliate Marketing Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm. And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Back with Manisha. Thanks for coming back here. So, do you think there are really pinnacle forms of wisdom that can drive your attitude towards finance? Is that part of the methods of the madness here? Is it the attitude?
You know, it is a big part of it, and I've written two books on personal finance. The first one is called On My Own Two Feet, and it addresses the basics. How to save, how to budget, how to deal with credit card debt, and so forth, did not touch as much on the psychological component. The second book, which just came out and is called Get Financially Naked, How to Talk Money with Your Honey, almost by definition ended up having a much larger psychological component because it brought in somebody else to the equation. And in researching the book, what I found out, and along with my co-author, was just how much of financial behavior really is driven by the soft and the squishy, and it can't be defined in an Excel spreadsheet.
Hmm. Great title for the book, by the way. What was the inspiration for the title?
Well, so what happened with the first book, On My Own Two Feet, my co-author and I were traveling the country talking to women's groups, and you know, we thought everybody would be as excited about talking about credit scores and insurance as we were, and every single speech we gave, the same thing would happen. We had a tiny little chapter at the end of the book on love and money, and at the end of our speech, women would come up to us and tell us the most unbelievable stories of being shortchanged in relationships. Mm. And that's, you know, when we thought, like, oh, my God, this needs to be put out there. You know, we need to get naked about this and just talk about it openly and honestly. Mm. And that's how the title came about, just really this notion that money's this pink elephant in our bedrooms.
Mm. Wow. Got fantastic story behind that. Tell us a little bit about that book, and it's newly released, you mentioned. Tell us some of the fundamentals of the book. I don't have it in front of me, so otherwise I'd be peeling off the pages.
Sure. No. It's all about peeling. That's what the book is about. Okay. The fundamental premise of the book is when you meet somebody special, your friends will ask you if you're physically compatible or emotionally compatible or spiritually compatible, but probably nobody will ask you if you're financially compatible. Yet the answer to that question will probably drive 90% of your marital bliss over the long run. And it's this one component of our relationship that we don't encourage people to talk about or analyze pre-commitment, and yet post-commitment is the number one source of fights.
Wow.
So you talk to any divorce attorney or therapist, and they will second this. Mm. And a short little side note on that. There's some interesting academic research that was done recently that showed that it actually makes sense why this happens. It happens because there's something very intoxicating in the early stages of romance about financial otherness. So if you're a saver, you'll be really turned on by somebody who's a spender and lives in the moment. And if you're a spender, you'll find something really comforting about the boundaries that a saver has. Mm-hmm. And then it wears off and you want to poke each other's eyes out. So,
what's the end answer? Can counseling in the end of the day really help? Can alignment of the financial goals and adherence to the plan, is that the solution to the problem, or is there just a fundamental kinetic difference with the mindset and it's just destined for failure from the beginning?
Well, the good news is none of the above. So you do not need to counsel yourself into identical mindsets, nor do you have to doom yourself to failure. The key to financial compatibility is really understanding each of your attitudes towards money. So in the book and on our website, the website is getfinanciallynaked.com, there's a compatibility quiz that you can do with your significant other that has 10 questions in each of three different areas: knowledge about money, interest in money, and behavior around money. And the point with getting financially naked is to understand as a couple where you have gaps on those three metrics and where you may have tension points. The idea isn't to become identical, but to understand where there's friction or holes and to address them.
Mm-hmm. And in your experience, well, first of all, this I can only imagine. When was the book published?
Just came out, literally. It was an end of December pub date.
Wow, exciting. Really, I think that you will find a pretty hot topic area that you've landed upon here. I can only imagine, and I'm very excited to be zoning in on this real challenge of how people can balance things. Do you find, in your research that you did for the book, do you find greater likelihood, for example, for divorce when there is major differences of income and or appreciation for spending money?
Interestingly, not on the first component, but on the second. So I've seen couples with widely divergent incomes that are able to be financially compatible and have a harmonious relationship. The thing that tends to get people is living on opposite ends of the saving-spending spectrum or living on opposite ends of the conservative-aggressive spectrum when it comes to how to invest your money. Mm-hmm. And there are ways that you can, you know, two people who live on opposite ends of the spectrum can come up with a solution that enables them to stay together, but first they have to identify that they're polar opposites. So I'll give you an example. Like, a saver marries a spender. Simple steps you can take. You guys each set a dollar amount that every month each of you can spend, no questions asked, and you set a dollar amount above which you each agree to consult each other before spending. Those two simple steps can help savers and spenders live much more palatably together.
Mm. And what percentage of the couples of the world, in your rough estimate, live by that methodology of communication with spending habits?
I'd say 20% is my you know, it feels like it's less than one in four couples that I come across are talking truly honestly about money.
Yeah.
And I don't fault them because it's not something that is encouraged. You know, where in your life do you get a message that this is something that you should talk openly and honestly about?
Do you feel that joint bank accounts are the way to go and complete disclosure of income and putting it all into one pool where it can be viewed and managed and discussed and is the right way to go? Or do you feel that some people ought to live their financial life separately in the interest of each other?
I think answering that question is like answering the question, how many kids should a couple have? It's so personal. I think transparency is key, and that's what every couple should strive for. But whether that transparency, which I would define as understanding what each person is earning, spending, how they have their retirement plans invested, their financial history, pre-relationship, But whether you choose to have your money separate or together or do a financial three-way, yours, mine, and ours, I think all of those can work and all of those can fail if you are not talking. And so I advocate at least once a year you want to do a full checkup on your household finances together, the same way you would have a physical.
Is there any financial counseling services available for people? I've never sort of heard of such a thing.
No, and I will tell you, this book has, you know, you asked earlier about monetization. This book has made me realize that that is one area, the interplay between general relationship therapy and financial advisors or financial planners is one that is not highly populated yet. And I will say that if there's anyone listening that is feeling tension, the closest thing I've found so far are hourly fee-based financial planners that have the CFP designation, oftentimes are well-versed in helping couples understand these tension points, and you can find them at the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA.org. But it is a very nascent field, helping couples deal with their money.
Yeah, and one that perhaps creates great opportunity online, you know, for some sort of service. Could you imagine any kind of a service that could offer this type of, you know, analysis for couples, or diagnosis, or answers to problems?
Yeah, I mean,
online?
I'm thinking online.
We have a very online community here, webmasterradio.fm. So.
Right. No, I mean, I think some kind of interactive Ning-type community would be phenomenal, where people could ask questions, find advisors in their area that do focus their practices in this sort of more holistic manner. And I think what people need more than anything is validation. I talk about this subject nonstop, and when my husband and I are out socially, I find that just bringing it up, other couples are like, oh, okay, it's okay to talk about it. And then they get excited, and I can't tell you in cocktail parties how many times people come up and want to talk to me about it. So we could replicate that cocktail party dynamic online.
Yeah.
That would really help more people feel comfortable talking about the subject.
I think you're onto something big here. The other question for you is just, what is your take on, in general, financial planning and financial planning for couples and getting the kind of expert in care? For example, who manages your money now? You're a professional money manager. Do you have an outside person managing your finances for you?
It's an interesting question. So my husband and I do the financial three-way, yours, mine, and ours. I manage mine. But the my husband's and the ours, we have an outside financial planner that we work with, and she's a CFP, and she helps advise on a couple of different levels. She will advise on what to invest in, but also kind of bigger, squishier questions like estate planning and making sure that we're maximizing opportunities to be tax advantaged in various activities that we might be doing. And so, I mean, I think that everyone can benefit from seeking outside professional guidance. And I'm really, you know, one of the things that I'd love to see people give young couples or new couples of any age is an hour or two with an hourly fee-based financial planner. I think that would be such a phenomenal wedding gift.
Do you compensate your certified financial planner hourly for the work that you and your husband contract with her?
So we are working with a fee-based financial planner. Luckily, we've done well enough that our assets are at the size that we are able to find somebody that I feel is very qualified and also ascribes to the same sort of principles that I like in hourly fee-based planners. The woman we work with is very rare. She's a gem. I typically advise most people to seek out hourly planners because most people need 3 to 5 hours of advice. If you're paying a percent of assets under management, You want to be getting a much wider array of services that, unless you're blessed to have a very complex financial situation, you probably don't need. And so what I'm saying is most people are buying the Ferrari when really the Toyota Camry is going to be perfect for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what do you think
planning.
That, to help the readers understand what that pinnacle would be of a Ferrari versus a Taurus, at what financial point, what does your financial picture need to look like before you're ready for a three-hour consulting session on a yearly basis or whatever it is versus a full-blown financial planner managing assets and trading stocks and determining whether mutual funds and or individual stocks are worthy of the investment, in portfolios or bonds or needs issues or family issues or, upcoming expenses. I mean, finance is complex, let's face it, right? What do you feel, what are your recommendations to women and or to couples regarding the challenges of managing money?
So here's the problem. The fee-based financial planners, folks, that will charge you a percent of your assets under management to help oversee your assets and provide comprehensive advice. Typically, the really, really good ones have a minimum asset under management of something in the seven figures. And so for the vast majority of Americans, that avenue is not open. And so what I worry about then are there are fee-based planners that will take individuals as clients who have less than seven-digit portfolios. But my experience is in that realm, the quality of advice that you get is so much higher with the hourly fee-based financial planner.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a broad sweeping statement. I have met phenomenal fee-based planners who will take smaller accounts. But the problem is, since they earn a percent of the assets under management, if you have only $100,000, they can't make a living off of you. So to get quality advice, if you've got $100,000 in savings or $200,000 in savings, which is a great number for the vast majority of people, you're going to get higher quality service paying $150 or $200 an hour to talk to an hourly planner.
Mm-hmm. And have them assess your current investments, make recommendations on additional investments, give you documentation, and explore different options and walk you through the logic behind each of the investment opportunities. Yeah?
Precisely. And my experience, ironically, has been the quality levels on both ends are great. It's that kind of middle gap where I really worry, where people are being charged a percent of assets, but they have portfolios of less than $1 million, because typically what happens then is that the advisor has to put them into high fee or high commission products in order for the advisor to make something that would approximate the $150 to $200 an hour that they would have gotten if they were paid hourly. And so then there's this level of opacity, and so that's why I prefer the hourly fee-based planner model.
We're turning to getting financially naked together. Isn't that fun to say?
Yes, isn't it? My husband gets the top search term on
the internet.
Don't
worry, I won't tell your husband
naked.
That we're getting financially naked together. What is your suggestion on a listener that might be very excited about that possibility, but may have hesitancy on the part of their significant other with regards to having this meeting? How does it go down? How do you really what's the plan behind getting financially naked together?
We need to have some foreplay. That's the key to all of this, because most people feel incredibly awkward talking about the subject. And so in the book, there are two exercises. The first is identifying your and your partner's money history. And it's kind of like a fun exercise. You can download it for free at getfinanciallynaked.com. And it's kind of like the newlywed game. And you can do it however you want. You can each, have a drink of a beverage of choice when you answer the question, or take off a piece of clothing as you answer a question. But the idea is, in a fun format, to run through a series of questions that will help each of you understand how both of you came to think about money the way you do. The next step is to do the financial compatibility quiz together that we talked about, which will identify, they're fun, simple questions with yes, no answers. But again, when you're done, you'll have a better sense of how each of you relate to money on the three metrics, knowledge, interest, behavior. Then you can take the step after you've done those two and actually seek out a financial planner and have a conversation together about what specifically you need to do with your assets, liabilities, investments, and so forth.
Do you have any other tips and advice and or calls to action that you would like to cast out to the fans listening to this podcast?
Absolutely. So my big one is this. Money is the pink elephant in the room, and the way we tame the elephant is to remember this fabulous quote. I have no idea who said it, but it's so true. And the quote is, truth is the best disinfectant. So just, it is awkward, it is scary sometimes, it can feel embarrassing, you can feel guilt or shame, but I promise you if you work through those emotions, talking about money with your honey is one of the best long-term investments you can make in your relationship.
Hmm. How can people get a hold of you, and why should they get a hold of you in the sense of, are you reaching out to people, looking for speaking opportunities, looking for appearances, have any book signings? We mentioned your Twitter account. Is there another vehicle that you want people to get a hold of you, and what would you like to hear from them, besides rave reviews about your book?
I always love to get questions. I'm always interested in trying to understand. My brain is already whirling for book number three, so I'm interested in hearing what knowledge gap people are struggling with right now. So if you've got personal finance questions you think somebody should be writing a book to address, send them to me. I'm on Twitter. I've got a Facebook fan page. It's facebook.com/MinishaTakor. And my website is MinishaTakor.com. And if you need speakers at events, by all means, shoot me an email. That is my primary form of monetization right now.
Well, we've really appreciated having you on the show. You've shed some wonderful light on this challenging topic, and hats off to you for really coming up with a great new topic area for this book. It's really an exciting area, and best of luck with the book.
Oh, thanks so much, and thanks so much for having me on.
Right on. Until next week, everybody, I hope your life is a little smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Thanks for listening in, everybody, and thank you again, Manisha, for showing up, for chiming in. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.